You're listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples.
CJSF 90.1 FM would like to remind listeners that the following program is a repeat broadcast.
Music and talk radio about all things, all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, the campus community radio station at Simon Fraser University, located on the unceded traditional Coast Salish lands, including Tsleil-Waututh, Kwitlam, Squamish, and Musqueam Nations. My name is Milena.
And my name is Paria.
And we're coming to you from our homes.
Our homes. We are on Zoom right now. We can see each other's faces, but you can't see us, and we can't see you. It's been sort of difficult. This is our first this is our first show in general as like the summer. What's your position? Community outreach.
We promise we know our jobs.
I think we know our respective jobs. I just totally forgot your name.
You forgot my name?
I remember your name.
Paria. I remember your name.
That's sweet. Thank you.
I am the outreach and promotions assistant.
Yes. And I'm the programming assistant.
And together we are, today we're intravenous.
Today we're intravenous and it's 11 a.m. I hope that everybody who's listening is getting to work on time, is maybe doing some yoga. I don't know what you're all doing, but I hope you're having a good time doing it.
Or maybe you're still in bed. Maybe you're my cousin and I'm forcing you to listen to the show because some pretty good stuff.
That's oddly specific, but I like
because
it.
It's gonna happen.
Yeah, okay, I like that.
I'm telling my cousin to
right now.
Everyone has to listen to the show live.
Yeah, okay, no, I like that.
The real ones.
Only the real ones can listen. So if you're listening right now, you're a real one. Today we have a very interesting topic, very, and we also have an interviewee at the end, or sort of in the middle of our show.
The whole show is just dedicated to the wonderful Robin Lawson.
Yes, she is an incredible Indigenous activist, and she has a lot of amazing insights into her own experience, obviously, and also the experiences of other Indigenous folks in Canada. Especially on today, this day, which is Canada Day. And I think it holds a lot of different meanings for different people. What has your relationship been with Canada Day, Milena, like since you were a kid, and how has that changed?
Well, I guess to start off and kind of introduce myself, I'm a second generation immigrant. My family is Chilean, but I grew up feeling very Canadian. I still consider myself very Canadian. It's actually taken me longer to reclaim my Latin roots than it has my Canadian roots because, I was born and raised here. So to me, I think I have a very, say, quote-unquote typical, but here, I'll just tell you what my experience was. I just kind of remember the celebrations. And so it was kind of like fun, and it's always been a joyful experience for me. I remember temporary tattoos a lot. I don't know if that was just me being so Canada Day would stay with me for the rest of the month because it's so hard to rub off those temporary tattoos. I don't know what they put in them. Probably not safe. But regardless, fun little experience for me. But that experience changes through education for some people, depending on which resources you used to listen to, because sometimes you're given those resources and you still don't look at them, even when they're right in front of your face. Perhaps because you don't want to let go of that feeling of celebration that a lot of people feel very proud of. And I think that that's something that I wanted to make clear, at least for me, during this whole episode. I don't think that there's anything wrong with feeling proud about being Canadian. I think being Canadian is wonderful. Canada gave me and my family wonderful opportunities, and I'm so proud to be Canadian. But I think it's incredibly important that we acknowledge and learn the entire history of Canada. And if we're going to celebrate it, then let's celebrate it. But let's also acknowledge all the things that brought us to where we are today. We're benefiting from a lot of the pain and violence, a violent history that Canada holds, and that is our history, that is Canadian history. And that's kind of how I feel about it. How about you, Parya?
Yeah, no, I think you said everything, pretty much everything I feel like about Canada Day and even my own experiences like a kid. I think similarly to you, like when I was younger, in elementary school and things like that, I don't know, it was always this sort of like fun thing, and we would all go, family and friends and stuff like that, we would go and watch the fireworks and see like people wearing crazy stuff, like I don't know, like a Canada flag is like a cape and then all this stuff, and it was also like a huge like time to drink and time to go crazy with your friends, like that's really, I think, what most people know Canada Day as, even though Canada's way of celebrating versus, for example, America's way of celebrating July 4th is a lot different, and they're a lot more patriotic and a lot more strong about it, because they have a lot, not to say that they have a lot more deep-rooted issues, but because they are an older nation, I think that, you know, a lot of their issues get swept under the rug, I would say even more than Canada. But again, like a lot of people in Canada, a lot of my peers, even in post-secondary education, aren't extremely aware about what Indigenous people have gone through in the last, I think, 153 years and beyond that Canada has, you know, been called Canada. And like you were saying, education is so important. I don't think it was until I started high school and I had this one social studies teacher who taught us about residential schools and told us about the Indian Act and all these kinds of things, that I really realized what it means to be Canadian, and that maybe this pride isn't necessarily deserved, and some of our attention and a lot of our attention should be going towards the Indigenous peoples who have lost their lives and a lot of their resources and their land, people who stole it. Right. And so I think in that way, my experience has been quite linear, and it's been nice that I was afforded the privilege of even getting an education to be able to learn all these things. But again, even in post-secondary education, we all have different courses and different majors, and not all of us are given this necessary education. I was talking about with Robin in the interview, social media can be great, and that a lot of people can learn about, you know, Canada's history, but then it all also can be used as a double-edged sword, where you can take information piece by piece and create something that didn't really exist. And yeah, so that's how I sort of feel about it.
Our home. Native land. And it was a home before Confederation. Mm-hmm. I think that is something if I ever had like an issue with.
Of course, especially since like even that song, like "Oh Canada" has been, again, not as much as America, because I know like from my American friends, some people or some students have had to sing Star Spangled Banners or whatever every morning, whereas I think we were indoctrinated a little bit less in Canada, but still, I mean, it's the same sort of sentiment, right? I don't know. I think it's totally fine, like you said, to have those conflicting views, because I, like you, am also like second generation immigrant. My parents immigrated here in the 90s, and then I was born, and so I am grateful for the opportunities that, you know, my family was given. But at the same time, like, it's so important to acknowledge and to learn about why, like you said, we even have, or how we even have these resources and opportunities to begin with, right? If it weren't for the Indigenous people who gave up their land, we wouldn't have any land to be on right now.
And so with all that being said, thanks for tuning in to be able to listen to Robin Larson and to just be present, whether it be in the first 5 minutes, if you stay a whole 30, it's starting right about now.
Thank you for listening.
Tansi, Robin Nitsigasong, Ne Nihio Egwa Métis, Treaty 8 Northern Alberta, Ochinia, Egwa St. Albert, Egwa Lac St. Anne, Nemiawetin, Iwapamitan. And what I said there is, hello, my name is Robin. I am Cree and Métis. I'm from Treaty 8 Territories, Northern Alberta, and my Métis side were from St. Albert and the Lac St. Anne settlements. And I'm so glad to see you.
Robin's always been an active part of her community, whether it be in her different management positions at charitable organizations to...
Distant even as a reporter. So this is where this is. This. That work was interrupted by a serious health issue that came at me in the middle of that career. And it really turned my world almost completely around. So I had to look really deep internal look as to where do I want to be in life and what's meaningful to me and what's going to make my life feel like some value to me. What those thoughts did was take me full circle from running from literally my past, my childhood, my nation, my nationality, my family in many ways, running from the experiences of my childhood where I was taken from my community and put into foster care for several years, and internalizing the lessons that came through that process, which were in large part very negative. They were very negative about, you know, who my family was. There were statements about who my mother is or was at the time. There was a lot of, a lot of negativity that was very internalized. And I didn't realize until I'd been hit with this health issue to what degree they had been internalized and how much work I had to do. And I realized while I was doing all of that work, all of those years to connect and reestablish being with my family in a healthy way that would allow me to feel pride, I had to go through and actually relearn almost my entire education. In relearning my entire education, that meant I had a completely new view of what Canadian history was and what I had been taught, what we had all been taught and actually miseducated on. That experience was really, I don't know how to describe the sense of betrayal. You know, I'd been a really proud little girl about knowing Canadian history and the pride of, oh my God, Canada's first prime minister and all of this stuff. And then to learn 10 years later, you know, into adulthood, that this prime minister that I was so proud of was the first one responsible for the obliteration of my own family. Was responsible for taking our land and resources and forcing my relatives onto reserves. It was a devastating reckoning, a realization. And once I understood this, that was the education I needed to get me started on eradicating the feelings of inadequacy that had been so internalized. Years of hearing demeaning statements about my own family, and even for myself, you know, that all took played a huge role in diverting my path to where I now feel that one of my greatest purposes is education, and we call it the re-education of Canada. Canadian reconciliation and all of these grand schemes where people think everything's just going to be healed if we just say no more racism. But as we can see to this point, reconciliation isn't really happening. But it can't really happen until, you know, the negativity of the past is actually truly and genuinely acknowledged. And that has to be acknowledged by all of Canada. The premiers couldn't agree on using the term systemic racism. If they can't face that much, it shows you how much we have got to work to get people to understand what even systemic racism is, despite the fact that Canada is built on this piece of legislation that is enormous and still very active, called the Indian Act. To acknowledge it. Once that's done, that's where the healing work starts. But we have to see that truth, and we haven't seen it yet. That's the point of my purpose at this time in my life, is to try to get as many people aware of these truths. It's an ugly background, but you know what? It's not a background that can't be remade in a truly and genuinely honorable way. There is a path to better. We just have to first acknowledge that we need it. It might sound funny, but my road home to my own people started with a history project that took me into some paperwork that showed me these family names and neighborhood and community names that I was familiar with, but I had no idea they were literally my own family. So I delved into this whole thing about genealogy, which led me to learn about my own family. I had no idea. My own family had no idea of our own history. We were that black hole that everybody said we came from. And it was through that kind of initial learning where I found out who my own family was, and to learn who they were was an astounding light bulb moment for me. To say that I heard the drums of my grandmother's through that work is an absolute understatement, because finding that history filled enormous holes in me as a person. It was exciting as well, because a lot of those people held some really memorable roles. But, you know, they were guides, they were translators, they signed treaties. There was this amazing background that belonged to me, and I had no idea. From there, my son was doing yet another homework assignment, which was reading stories about Indigenous issues in the newspaper. Had the misfortune of reading the replies to the stories in those media stories. And they still are. I don't know how to describe the vitriol, but it's absolutely racism-based commentary on essentially every Indigenous stereotype you may have heard to date. This is what his introduction to how Canada viewed the Indigenous. That meant I had to counter that. That took me to seeking out genuine Indigenous scholars. Within those comments, I was finding amazing replies in return to these comments. There were people in there that were writing facts to counter the stereotypes. And I would grab those people that were making those comments, and I would start following them, or I would contact them. And as I learned more, I joined encountering those comments. It was like this team effort to educate anybody else who was reading. In my head, I thought, what if another child like mine is reading these comments, and that's what they're taking in, is education about the Indigenous? From there, I asked them where they got their information, and they loaded me up with years worth of amazing Indigenous scholars and books and papers and things to study. So I feel like there's a level of gratitude I have for the people who have gone through before me to go through the education system, as difficult as it would have been for them, the amount of time that they invested in the education, and then the amazing level of generosity to share that information with people out there, people just like me. If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have the education I have today. And once I was feeling more confident about who I was, there was an enormous reduction in shame and this constant sense of not ever feeling good enough. And a lot of us feel that because we are always told in Canadian media and education that we are not good enough. I relearned my culture thanks to, it sounds crazy, a bunch of really horrible comments. The redirection, the route to this day wasn't easy, but I'm here. And now I want to pass on the generosity of what all of those people before me taught me over all of these years. It's my turn to share that and hopefully make another dent in the overall Canadian understanding of who the Indigenous are.
How much do you think social media has influenced the way that we see Indigenous peoples in Canada? And also, how do you think that it'll form the way that future generations learn about Canadian history through social media platforms that aren't necessarily, you know, controlled by the government and more so controlled by the people?
Well, first, social media is a bit of a double-edged sword. The incorrect information can be thrown out there just as much as the information we would like people to know. Perhaps I'll consider that side of the sword a little bit of a smaller obstacle. The greater benefit has been that we have a voice that we've never had before. We have a way and a mean to say actually no in a way that we've never been seen before. Social media has been critical. It's crucial to us getting our points and issues in education out. I say that to look to social media itself for the education is kind of an incomplete process. And I think you have to get education as much as possible from verifiable, credible sources.
In your blog, the first word you use to describe yourself is a mother. I wanted to know how motherhood has affected your activism and how activism has maybe affected the way that you parent your child.
Oh boy. First, you know, it's been said like millions of times, we want a better world for our children. You know, that's why anybody who gets into anything about making a better world, that's usually a big point of motivation. In my world, that includes not only teaching my son, but as many people as possible about the truths of our society. And, we strive to teach our children that we can't make a meaningful change for the better when a situation is in need of correction, when it's unseen and or disregarded. So in order for me to work out as a mother, whether something needs changing within my own family, with my own son, we have to first acknowledge we have a problem. And as a country, Canada has to first acknowledge we actually really have a problem. So, you know, we have to see these things first in every level of our lives. That's just part of being a parent. And it's part of being an educator. For me, I was going to talk about, you know, when I was thinking about this question, for me as a mother, regardless of what hat I wear, I've learned that mother is the role with the largest impact on the world. Aside from the fact that I adore my hard-won miracle, you know, that is my child. My cultural teaching showed me as life givers how intrinsic and organically connected we are to the earth. For example, we know water is life, right? And our first experience with it is literally in the womb. That understanding of our connection directly to the earth shaped how I view what motherhood is. And it's such a big role. It's such it's crucial on so many levels. And it's a privilege being a life giver. And there's a reverence for motherhood, for life givers, with the reasons for it that I never learned from settler or Christian lessons. that I learned from my Indigenous spirituality in ceremonial lessons. So to me, motherhood is my biggest and most important work. I'm a mother to my son, but I'm also a mother to all the other kids that will come across my path. It's a big job.
Today we're speaking on June 29th, and in a few days is going to be July 1st, which we know in Canada is Canada Day. I wanted to ask you what you do on Canada Day.
Well, for a lot of years, I did what everybody else does. You know, I went to the celebrations, the fireworks, I ate the hot dogs, whatever. I don't bother as much anymore. The more I learned about the genuine history of Canada and its relationship to my peoples, I guess I feel less celebratory. I feel more strongly about people actually learning about this country in all its darkness and its prized images. I would like on days like Canada Day, the day like Canada Day, I would want people to acknowledge within their gratitude that all that they have is in place thanks to the original treaties and the welcome that the Indigenous people originally offered. That's missing from Canada Day, and I don't feel it's replaced by Indigenous Day on June 21st. I think this needs to be fully acknowledged on Canada Day. It's yet intrinsically understood how much Canada benefited from what the Indigenous lost, but was willing to. I could celebrate sincerely if the calls for equity and equality were honestly met. For me, I think that starts with honoring the treaties.
Called Reconciliation by a Palatable Replacement, the Pretendian, which spoke about the position of a Pretendian. Can you explain to us what this is, and how can we as radio show hosts or anybody else with a platform avoid this?
Okay, well, first I'll explain that Pretendian is a play on words, as in pretend Indian. What a lot of people don't know is that there's an enormous phenomenon in play right now across Canada, and that's that an extraordinary number of Canadians who are now calling themselves Indigenous, self-identifying as Indigenous, despite having no such ancestry, or if they do, they're pulling from someone 300 or more years ago. It astounds me, and it infuriates me that regard for Indigenous nations is so low, that people think that they can just do this. They can suddenly self-declare they're Indigenous. And I challenge anyone who believes in this belief system that was the colonialist setup of this one drop rule. If you have one drop of Indigenous blood or one drop of Black blood, you are therefore Indigenous and you are therefore Black. That has got zero to do with Indigenous understandings and history. I would challenge anybody who has this mindset to take that same ancestral lineage and see if they can apply for citizenship in any other nation in the world. You are a member of an Indigenous nation. If you can give your familial lineage to that nation and that nation accepts you back, that's the same as any other nation in the world. There's nothing special about that. So what these people do is form these groups, and they then endorse each other. They call themselves an Indigenous group, and then they endorse each other. Yes, we accept you into our community. We are a nation. It sounds astounding, but this is what's really happening. And out of that, unfortunately, all of those people are doing things like applying for and collecting and receiving awards, grants, scholarships, jobs, any kind of opportunity that was meant for the Indigenous. This was meant to give us a hand up, to lend, you know, to try to level the playing field. The reasons behind it, you know, the reasons behind it vary. But to me, whatever the reasons, whatever the rationalization, it's irrelevant to me, because they're still taking precious resources and assets that belong to kids that are desperate for the opportunity to have a life that all of these other kids have already had. One of the examples